My name's Liana Berry, and you're listening to Art Muse Podcast, a podcast about the intersections between art, healing, and creativity. This episode's interview is with Emily, who is a printmaker, artist, and owner behind The Little Press. Emily specializes in letterpress printing and carves out a pathway for this slow, meticulous style of printing within our fast-paced life. She will make you fall in love with paper, with written word, and blends intricate patterns, enchanting typography, and beautiful symbols. I hope you enjoy the interview. You can find Emily on Instagram at The Little Press or her website, thelittlepress.net, or you can pop into her beautiful studio shop on the main street of Margaret River in Western Australia.
Welcome, Emily. It's so lovely to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I don't even know where to start. I know I wrote a list of questions for you, and it's just like lovely to see your face and have a chat. I have followed you for quite a long time in your adventures as a printmaker, and I actually had the pleasure of meeting you. I don't even know if you remember. A long time ago when I was looking at studio spaces and you were subletting a big space, industrial warehouse space that you had in Northbridge.
Wow, Cowell Street, notorious Cowell Street.
And that's something that hopefully we'll get around to chatting about today, because you've had some big evolutions in your life since we met all those years ago in inner city Perth. Neither of us live in the city, so I will look forward to hearing a bit more about that further down the track. But before I get sidetracked, which I tend to do, and then I have to edit my way around it, is that I'd just love for you to introduce yourself and a little bit, I guess, about your journey to your creativity and printmaking.
Yeah, so my name's Emily. I did graphic design at uni and then went to Europe for 6 months. And it wasn't even part of my degree, but I just wanted to get out of Perth. And I ended up in this beautiful uni in Holland, in Rotterdam. And they had this really cool building where like everything was integrated, like there was fashion and art and screen printing and all like music designers, like everything was in the one building. And so I just kind of like wagged all of my classes that I was meant to go to, because it wasn't counting towards my degree anyways. And I just spent the whole time in the screen printing department. And that's where I just fell in love with like hand printed things, like that you could touch the ink on the paper. I just hadn't seen any of that anywhere in Australia before. So when I came back from that, I was just like, I just needed to like print. And everyone was telling me that I couldn't, which just made me more like fired up to just do it myself, make my own little DIY setup. And yeah, I just started making art prints just because I just had to. I don't know why. I would do little markets in Perth and sell my art prints there. And then it accidentally became this business, The Little Press. And I think that's been about 15 years or 14 years.
So fascinating, though, how for some creatives, it's like you fall in love with the medium. You just become like so enchanted by the medium itself, and then that drives your creative journey.
Yeah.
There's so many different types of printmaking. And I guess for some of our audience, when we say printmaking, they're going to think of like lino printing or screen printing and things like that. But what is, I guess, what were the printmaking methods that you fell in love with and that you've adopted into the core of your practice?
Well, screen printing was definitely that like early love. Like that was kind of uni days for me. And then one day we're coming back from the beach. My partner Rob said, let's stop at this cute vintage shop, Bluebird Vintage on Cambridge Street. And I was like, oh no, I've got sandy feet. Like I don't want to be annoying and put sand in their shop. But we stopped in anyways, and I picked up this little notebook, and it had a print on it of a penny farthing bicycle. And because I just came back from Holland, I was obsessed with bicycles because that was just the way you got around over there. And I could feel that the print was pressed into the paper, and I didn't understand how that was tactile. And there was a name on the back of the little notebook. So I contacted Jeff Moore, and I was just like, I need to know how you've printed this. Like, I don't know why, but I just need to know. And so, yeah, whenever I got a uni friend to come with me, because it was like out in the sticks, and we were going to some man's garage that I had no idea about.
Safety first. yeah.
And he showed us this old machine, and I was, I guess I wasn't at first enchanted by the machine itself because it actually looked like a tractor and it looked dangerous and heavy. But I loved the crispness of the detail and how it was pressed into the paper, which I hadn't seen before. And I guess doing graphic design at uni, I didn't really have exposure to liner cut, etching, lithography, like all of those kind of techniques. So to me, it was magic. I did do a little bit of etching. I don't know, it just wasn't the same. It seemed different. And then I did a workshop with Jeff in letterpress. And then I was just nagging him constantly to sell me a press, or how can I get one? And then I found my little press, my original little press.
Oh, that's such a cool story. And just like that discovery of that like little print and how it it sparked the drive and the courage. Like, I'm glad you had the courage to go to contact him, but also to like go out and, like you said, out into the sticks and approach someone. I guess once you saw how he was working, that became more of a focus. Did you keep your other styles of printmaking for a long time? Because now mostly what you do is letterpress printing, isn't it? And you don't, do you dabble in any of the other methods, or is that your kind of only one these days?
Yeah, letterpress is like every day, but screen printing is like an old friend that if I have an exhibition coming up, I'll do some screen prints because I can go large and it's, I don't know, it's sort of easier in a way, the process. It's a little less complicated than letterpress, whereas letterpress is super tiny and very detailed. Well, it can be quite big, but I print probably maximum like an A3 size. So I just love having giant posters at exhibitions. And I guess the step from screen printing to letterpress is that you use the same technique in a way. You use a UV light to expose the screen for screen printing, but you also use that same contraption to expose letterpress printing plates. So Rob's dad made me this light box, and that was when I was really into screen printing. And then I worked out that I could use the light box to make my letterpress plates. So once I started doing letterpress plates, that was the new thing for me. And I don't really do many screen prints, only if I have an exhibition, which is like once every 10 years. But it is nice.
And just like you said, to meet an old friend, to re-immerse yourself back in the process and have that freedom, and that freedom with size and familiarity. That's interesting that they do share some of the same processes. I know bits and pieces about types of printmaking, but not any of them thoroughly. And I didn't realize that they shared, that similarity, which is a nice carryover for you.
Yeah, well, traditional letterpress would be handset type, using lead type or wood type that's in a case, and you're limited to the fonts and the font sizes that are in that case. So when I did the workshop with Jeff, he had like the traditional letterpress, and I was like, oh, I really love hand lettering at that time. And it was frustrating me that I had to choose between these fonts. And it's sort of, it's almost mathematical, like trying to mix different fonts, because you've got like 8-point, 10-point, just like we have on the computer, but it's all physical, actual lead pieces, and trying to make them fit together with traditional letterpress is, I find it really challenging. So yeah, that's been around forever, for ages. That's very old. But in the, I think it's the 80s that photopolymer plastics invented, which is sort of around when screen printing's big. So that's where the light sensitive emulsion comes in. And then we can modernize letterpress by using our own like designs, our own drawings, our own hand lettered fonts, instead of having to be restricted by the type cases that are in the studio. So
I think that evolution is interesting because, like you said, there's like an industrial history there. Letterpress printing has been very practical, and it was a way to print media and disperse it.
Mm.
And like you said, it was very mathematical and kind of restricted in that way. But then part of the modernization is that it's become very artistic, and a lot of the spaces that you will see letter press printing popping up is places where people either want the customization, like because you're making invites and, you know, things like that, or it's an artistic expression where you're making artworks or cards. And
definitely,
it's interesting to see how it's evolved. And I think it gives it, although, you know, like you said, you're using a modern material, it gives it so much more freedom, I think, to move into that artist space.
And it's pretty interesting with letterpress, like the modern material has to work with the old machines. The old machines aren't changing. So my machine's old big boys, I keep saying he's 90 years old, must be getting close to 100, and it's all cast iron. So like he's not changing, but the modern technique adapts to the old like process. So the plastic needs to be exactly the same height as the type used to be, or the type is that we use. Yeah. So the lead type that I mentioned about in the cases, that's an exact height. It's type high, so that type foundries around the world would be able to send their type to letterpress printers and it's going to work on their machine. It's going to be high enough to pull the ink off the rollers. I think there are two different type heights. I should have like redone my history notes.
But it is, like you said, that unification of those two materials, is like the modern and the historic, is actually really lovely to think that, like you said, it's not just, you know, sometimes we feel like modern materials kind of bulldoze in and like intrude on the territory. But like you said, there's actually a really nice unity there. It's not necessarily that there's like a bulldozing happening. It's like they actually have to meet, which I think is actually like, yeah, really romantic and nice.
Yeah, definitely. Like the old machine is like 750 kilos. The printing plate that goes on it, the plastic, is just kind of minuscule in the whole mechanism of it all. Like it's still archaic. And yeah, it needs to fit exactly to the old standards for it to work. Otherwise, the machine's just not going to print it. It's going to say, I like this photopolymer plastic, but only to a point. I'm not changing for the modern times.
That's so cool. I would love to, like, it was one of my questions that I was most excited to hear about the stories behind your printing presses, because I know that you have affectionate names, but you have two, don't you?
Well, my first press, Little Len, it was bought from a man called Leonard Kuma in the UK, and it was someone that Jeff had told me, oh look, someone in the UK is selling a letterpress machine. And so I got in contact with him, and I was working in Fremantle at the time as a freelance graphic designer, so I had that 45-minute train ride to and from work. And I just, like, every train ride I would just be emailing Len going, hi, like, I'd love to buy the machine. And at first he didn't want to sell it to me, but then he did. And then he kind of became my like little print mentor. It was really sweet. I think he was quite elderly at the time. And yeah, we were like pen pals for ages. And that was really sweet because he was there at the start of my journey to like help with any troubleshooting tips that I had. So Little Len was my first press. And then...
How did you get him from the UK?
It was so much convincing. First off, I was like, oh, Len will love it, like the rollers will be warmer in Australia. It has to be a certain temperature before the ink on the rollers is happy. If it's too hot, doesn't like it. I imagine if it's too cold, it wouldn't like it either, but we don't have that problem here. Yeah, so Len packaged everything up for me, and I insisted that it go airmail so it would get to me ASAP. Wasn't waiting for a boat. And yeah, he packaged it all up and everything was in these little boxes. The rollers came in like an old cereal box that he'd like repurposed and made a custom wooden base for. And all these boxes are like, you know, like 1970s cereal boxes. And then he would hand write what everything in the box was with his, you know how elderly people have beautiful calligraphy handwriting, kind of shaky. It was beautiful. So yeah. That's how it came to me, all packaged up.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he was very amazed at how quickly it arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was printing with that for ages, doing like little market stall artwork. And then I just wanted to go like deeper with the impression, like what we were talking about before with like the modern processes versus the traditional processes, like with with traditional lead type, you can't really get a deep impression. Actually, you actually, if you see letterpress with a deep impression with lead type, it's a kind of a sign that it's a terrible printer, not very skilled at all. And then the deep impression now is what everybody wants. They want that proof that it's been through the jaws of a press and squashed with that 2 tons of pressure. We want to feel something tactile these days because, it's so rare to find. So, when I first did my first set of prints, I sent it to Len in the UK and I was like, here's my prints. Like, what do you think? It's my first attempt at letterpressing. And he's such a sweet person, but he was like, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but this is terrible printing. Like, you've smashed into the paper. I can feel the impression. It's terrible printing. What have you done? You should kiss the paper. You shouldn't feel an impression. And I was like, yeah, but
that's a bit of love.
Everyone wants to feel it now. So yeah, because I wanted that deep impression work, which is terrible printing to old Len. And, you know, he's a British printer. They take a lot of pride in their work. I found Big Boy. Because I was actually like pulling my neck out trying to get a deep impression on the little press. I was nagging Phil Brooks at the time to sell me one of his presses. I was like, you're not using it. I know you've got one. Can I have it? And nobody, now that I have a press, I would never sell it. Like, I can totally understand. It's like an old friend you never want to part with. So yeah, someone was selling their press and I bought it and it was beautiful because it came from a third generation print family. So the granddad had an old print studio and was printing like school books, just everyday commercial kind of printing, not like beautiful bespoke things, because that's, you know, how things were printed back in those days. And then, his son took it over. And then the grandson was like, I'm not printing. I'm not going to be a printer, because he kind of saw it as this dying art that couldn't compete with digital printing. Whereas I saw the bespoke kind of resurgence of it. So then I got Big Boy.
I'm glad of your persistence.
Yeah.
To like persist to me, like, well, someone's going to sell me one. One of you has to. I will just wait and make sure you know I'm here.
I know. Definitely. And then when I went to pick it up, a man was there. He's like, you know, this is a big machine for a little lady. I was like, just fire me up some more. Go on.
You think all those comebacks in those situations, like afterwards.
I know.
I don't know, something about certain men seem to, I have a really extra large, beautiful dog, and the amount of comments I get from men that, like, you know, when I'm walking my dog, that he's like this big dog and I'm like this, little lady. And I'm just like, but I can never get the comebacks out fast enough. I just like fume for the rest of my walk. And I'm like, no, I should have said this. It would have sounded so smart.
Yes, definitely. Well, my comeback was just like, I'm taking this press and I'm running with it.
Yeah, that's it. Who's winning in that situation? You've got the press. Yeah, that's so lovely to hear how you acquired. It's interesting to think of that. You've mentioned a few times already that relationship that people have with paper. And I think that fear at different times in like the technological revolution, a lot of people are frightened, like, oh, you know, books are going to die out, or like, you know, printing's, you know, going to die out. But actually there's like always this attraction to like tangible, tactile materials and this appreciation of it. It might not be dispersed as widely, but I feel like, you know, people still thoroughly enjoy holding and reading books, even though a lot of people still use Kindles and read online. Despite that initial panic when those sort of mediums came out to be able to read online, they haven't died. Like the same thing with handmade, hand-printed cards and wedding stationery and things. It's certainly like not disappearing.
I hope so. I hope so. I definitely love paper. Like, I love journaling, I love writing. Like, all of my art still and always has been started as pen to paper. I bought an iPad for a little while last year and sold it straight away. Like, it was just infuriating to work with. It changed the way my lines came out of the pen, and I was like, I am going back to pen and paper. And I don't know, it is changing, I guess. Like, and having the shop, you know, people will come in and say, oh, I feel bad for using paper, and I was like, no, like, journaling with paper is so important, reading off a printed book is so important, don't feel bad about journaling. Like, it's really important to do that. And I just think, I don't know how I don't even know if you can journal digitally. I'm sure you can. There's probably an app for it.
Yeah, I'm sure there is an app. There's an app for everything. And so that perspective, do you think, comes from like that eco-consciousness of like being aware that paper is made out of trees, you know, at its origin? So it's like this fear of, well, you know, I don't want to be wasteful of that. But I think sometimes it can be so easy to get fixated in a really kind of micro level, because I think, I don't know, there's lots of areas that you can lower your ecological impact, and like the way that you eat and the packaging and all of these different things, that actually like slowing down, like doing practices that involve paper maybe doesn't need to be very at all on the list, but definitely not right at the top. And I think the practices themselves of being creative or journaling are actually so important for the soul, which it's this constant balance, and I think people really struggle to navigate that.
Totally.
You know, and then feel this overextending guilt into all of these areas and cut themselves short on, that makes me sad to hear that in lots of ways, that someone might be thinking like, oh, I don't want to take up that space or use that resource. But that resource, a journaling book or a well-written card to your mum or your best friend or whoever it is. Yeah, as long as the paper's not cutting down old growth forests and the Amazon to fuel our paper supply.
Totally. Yeah, it was a younger woman, and I just said, like, the paper is, I can tell you, everything that going into making that little notebook. It's sustainably sourced paper. It's post-consumer recycled envelopes. It's hand-printed. It's keeping old machines alive. It's printed in small batches. It's a tiny little notebook that could last you like a whole year of journaling if you wanted, or longer, like, depends on how often you write. But if you journaled in that book for a whole year and you filled it up, like, the time with yourself would be so precious that you've accumulated over that time through those pages, the resources used to produce that book, compared to what we could easily forgo with one plastic toothbrush or something that's worth of paper. I don't know, it's just, there's no plastic in it.
No. Yeah.
So yeah, that kind of shocked me, to be honest. Maybe it was a bad excuse for, maybe she just doesn't like journaling.
Well, she could purchase some of your beautiful cards, of which there I've seen lots of.
It is interesting. I think there's a shift in age, definitely. Younger folk will come into the shop and they'll have their phones ready. They'll be taking photos of books, you know, like the pages of the books, or they'll be taking photos of my artwork sometimes. And I'm like, guys, maybe don't. But it's sort of like they want to consume it digitally and they want to consume it all. And I wonder, like, do they even go back and look at these photos? Maybe just buy the book and sit with it and have a cup of tea and feel the paper and just like muse on it, you know?
That worries me. I think sometimes we don't know what we're missing out. Like, if it's not there, and I worry that if people are so immersed into digital formats that they don't realize like what they're missing out on. And it's like the same with art making. All the time I get asked as an art therapist, like, I want to do more art making, or I want to be more creative. How do I do that? You have to make time. You don't wait till you feel good, or you don't wait till you feel inspired. I mean, it's natural to have like ebbs and flows and not, you know, go through periods where you're not, unless you're, you know, working and or very well rehearsed. You naturally don't spend all the time, and you do go through periods where you have lulls and things, but I just think it's so easy for the years to pass on by and you haven't been creative, because, you know, our world is so fast-paced and so consuming that I feel like it's the same with digital. Like, you could easily consume everything digitally, and if you don't make time to be around like books and paper and creativity, then time could easily just pass by and you miss that beauty and you miss that slowing down and that tactile connection that happens. I just it makes me sad to think that some people aren't getting that or often enough at all, and aren't even aware of what it can offer you.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, there's like digital content creators making cool digital art forms, but I don't know, I'm old school. Like, I need to make it with my hands. It needs to be in the world. I need to be able to touch it. When I was working as a freelance designer, I did a stint at a website designing company, and it just faded so quick for me because it was never anything that I could physically see, like interact with. It was just on the screen, and maybe that was another thing that fired my passion for the press.
Yeah.
And just pulled me into that direction.
I wonder, there obviously is like a benefit. There has to be a benefit for people to be creative in digital formats, because otherwise people wouldn't do it. But I don't know. I'd love to, maybe I need to find someone to interview. And I really want to talk about it on the podcast, but I don't even know how to broach the subject, because I feel so passionately about having it in front of you and having it, your body engaged with it. And I feel like that's where a lot of the benefit comes from. But yet like you said, there is so much of it out there. You see so many people, you know, engaging with their creativity 90% digitally. I'd love to, because when I do it, and I don't know if it's just a personal thing, like you said, I'm the same, like I'm completely turned off it. I don't draw on iPads. I don't. Once I finish painting, it gets sent for scanning. And then if I want to reproduce it and that's it, like I'd never skip that process. People are like, oh, why don't you just do it on an iPad? And then, you know, you can fix your mistakes as you go along really easily. And then you just send it to print really easily. And no, I need to do the physical production side of it. So yeah, it's a really interesting, really big, complicated discussion, I guess, but one that's not going away because it's that modern versus traditional.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I love about letterpress. I mean, there is like this digital point in that I draw my artwork and then I digitize it. I take a scan of it and then I vectorize it just so I can get really crisp, fine lines for my printing plate. It goes hand-drawn. And then it gets scanned in, vectorized, and then it turns into a photographic film negative. And then it gets exposed through the light sensitive photopolymer with the UV light, which is the screen printing box component. And then it becomes a printing plate. So there is this little time where it is on the screen and you can kind of see like, oh, you know, maybe I'll put this ink color and you can kind of visualize it. But the thing that I love about letterpress is that it's never going to work exactly how you think it's going to work. And that's where the magic creeps in, because you're working with these different steps in the process. Each step has its limitations. And yeah, there's always something unexpected in the result, which is the magic. Like I couldn't imagine it just being exactly how it's seen. There's no room for imperfections. That's kind of boring to me.
Yeah, that's the human side. Like you said, that's the soulful side. I feel like that's what lights us up. That's how we connect, is seeing those imperfections. Because at the end of the day, people are imperfect. So it's like that mirroring back of seeing ourselves in the world around us. Yeah, it's really interesting. I did think I saw on one of your Instagram stories, or maybe it was a post one day, about like a tiny grain of I don't know what it was, like, and you were just saying there's lots of variations of imperfections that you're talking about. I'm sure you're not, you know, just talking about that sort of one where something creeps in. But it sort of got me think, oh yeah, there's actually so much room in your process for things going awry, or things that you have to kind of navigate or embrace along the way. And I'm sure some of them are welcomed slightly more than others. There's so just so many layers to your process, actually designing what you're creating, but then the actual printing process as well. And then, yeah, little specks of dust that creep their way in
when you're running low on paper. That's the only time they creep in. Yeah, like the machine itself is huge, so it's sort of like a baby elephant size. Not that I really know what a baby elephant size is. It's quite large. It's a couple of meters long, and so you're in this space with this machine. Like you're moving around. There's paper everywhere. There's dust, because it's like a large area that you're in. It's not like a tiny, you're not so close in with it like you might be with embroidery or painting. In this very small world, you're in this room with the press, and there's dust, and it can float onto the press sometimes, right when you don't want to. And there's just so many things to look out for. Dust is like the tiniest of them all, but it's a surrender for sure. You step up to the press and you just have to allow hours, because if you try and rush it and think you're going to print in like a really short amount of time, it's just never going to work. I think the presses have their own personalities and they're just like, oh no, simple one color. No, you're not going to get away with it today. And I don't know what happens, but it just doesn't work sometimes. And I know other days it will print really well, but yeah, it's constant. So yeah, you get a job on the press. You've got to watch the inking coverage. You've got to watch the paper positioning. You've got to watch the inconsistencies across the print, how it's in the way that it's inking, the impression. Oh, there's so many factors. And then this tiny little speck of dust will float in on the print job halfway through, and you're just like, hang on a second, I've been looking for all these other things, and now I can just see this speck of dust. How long has that been on there for? Oh my god, it's been on there for 10 prints. I'm running low on the paper. And you can't be angry at it, because it's just how it is. Like, it's just what it is.
Yeah, like you said, teaching is surrender. Because sometimes you have quite big runs. I know that sometimes you can share a page. Can you share a page with letterpress printing? Is that just like
print two up or print multiples on a page?
Yeah. Or do you have to do like each one singularly, in which case you would have like a lot of repetitions?
Yeah, it's the most repetitive job. I love the repetition of it. I don't know why. It's just so soothing. It's like a meditation. With my press, it's not really, my press isn't that big. So I can't print too many on a page. I wouldn't be able to print like, you know, 10 different things and then just cut them down, because then that would spread the impression over too large of an area. And then it would be too hard for the press to work, because when you start printing something really large, like you need a lot more pressure than if you printed something small with a deep impression. So yeah, I do tend to print one up at a time. And then if there's two colors, then you go through the press twice. And if you want to die cut it, three times. Yeah. Oh, wow. Every pass through the press is one, is my hands going in there, putting in. I was treadle operating for a really long time. And then I got a motor, which was great, because then I wasn't like physically operating this press with my leg muscles, which is pretty intense when back then I was doing like huge hour days. Rob was working with me for a bit as well, and then he did that. And then now I'm actually back to treadle operating it because I haven't got the power set up in my print room.
No.
And it's actually really nice. Yeah, it's actually a lot of hard work. It's a workout.
We're talking about like body engagement in art making and creativity. Like your process is right up there. No need to go to the gym. Yeah, you can just work your legs on
the... I know. Yeah, it's, Jeff calls it the one-legged aerobics machine. You just have to keep remembering to rotate. Otherwise, you just get one really strong leg or arthritis in one knee. Like your feet are going, your hands are going, your eyes are just like looking at the job to make sure nothing's like going wrong. It's a full immersion. Like you cannot be multitasking. I find it hard to have a conversation at the same time. Yeah, no, it's just like you're just in that world. You're in the world of 100 years ago when you're operating this press, and it's really beautiful because it's slow, it's meditative, it's physical, and at the end of it you get this beautiful pile of prints that are just, yeah, you can feel the impression, there's detail, it's rewarding. You get rewarded for your hard work at the end of the day, which is beautiful.
Yeah. I think it definitely, the energy definitely and journey definitely translates to the end product. But yeah, just to think all of those different steps and then how many times it's gone through the press. Yeah, really beautiful, but really quite incredible. But you sound like you get so much reward for yourself just from your process. Like, do you feel once it's made and it's out into the world, do you feel like that people might not understand that? Does that bother you? Like if someone comes into the shop and they're like, that's, a lot of people might be naive to just how much time and patience and work and energy and story has gone into them. Like, is it important for you that people know that, or do you feel like you're able to kind of let it go?
I think as long as people connect with the work, like the art, then I'm so happy with that. You know, for them to pull a card or a notebook or one of the other products, like my little photo frames that I make out of shiny paper, for them to like take that off the shelf and go, oh, I like this enough to buy it with my money, I'm usually happy with that because it speaks to something in them. And that's, I guess, the main reason why I make art, is that little, I don't know, connection that they see in the artwork, and it reminds them of something or it takes them somewhere. That's the most important thing to me. Usually if someone kind of grabs a notebook or a card quickly and, I don't know, and I'm feeling in the mood, I might go, did you know that this has been printed through the letterpress machine twice, and it's been printed once in the gold and then second in the emboss, and the two have to line up so perfectly for it to not feel like you're drunk when you're looking at it. And then,
just slipping in some education, I like it.
I know. And sometimes I'm met with a completely blank face, like they couldn't care less, which is amusing. And then other times, like most of the times, they can probably see that I'm clearly quite passionate about it, and they maybe humor me and they go, oh, wow, that's really interesting. I had no idea. That's the fun thing about having a shop. Yeah. And then some people were just like, how? Like, I mean, if I saw it, I would have been like, how did you do this? Like, show me exactly how you did this. I want to understand how you've defied gravity with this embossed artwork.
Yeah. And hopefully you spark that interest for a lot of people. And that's the beautiful thing, I guess, about having your shop in Margaret River, is that there is that interface with the public. And then you've got your studio at the back, haven't you? Where you, that's where your presses are. Is that, am I wrong? I think you've had a revamp recently and I don't want to say the wrong thing and something's changed.
Oh, my studio shop is like always evolving. Big Boy is safely at my home press room, which is the shed, because it's just too hard to move him every time we want to. They're renovating the back of the building at the moment. Yeah, everything's been shifted a lot for the amount of heaviness that everything is in my studio. Essentially, it is a studio shop. So there's the shop front and then there's a dedicated studio space where we package wholesale orders and work on some custom jobs. But definitely with the move to Margaret River, I've stepped away from doing wedding invitations, officially took it off my website and didn't even tell anybody. No, it was a huge part of what I did for a really long time. And it was so rewarding because you're creating this really beautiful artifact for somebody's wedding day, which lives on after the day. And it's that only tangible piece of the wedding before the day. Yeah, no, I did some really beautiful work with people all over the world. But with moving down here, like the logistics was just a nightmare. And I couldn't just, you know, quickly have my suppliers on hand, because there's so many suppliers that you rely on with letterpress to make your printing plates, to get your paper in, to get the envelopes. That's if it's just a straight up letterpress job. But yeah, it can be pretty complex. Die cutting, duplexing, ugh, it's a lot.
Yeah, that's, I do have listeners all over the world. So there is a heavy demographic from Western Australia and the East Coast of Australia, but I do have people listening from very interesting places, so welcome all of you, because I do get excited. There's like someone listening from Jersey, I think, which is an island of the UK, if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it is.
And Germany and South America. So Margaret River, for those people, unless you can probably pop up Google, is, I don't know what the population size is, but it is still a town. It's not a city. And it's 4 hours from Perth-ish. Is it mm-hmm. 4 hours?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 4 hours.
Yeah.
No, three. No, you can do it in three.
Yeah. If you're slow, you can do it in four. Like
yeah, I do it in five.
So it's quite a distance. So like you said, those logistics have increased with your move. Like they're probably always there and they're always a juggling act. But being quite far removed from this, the biggest city in Western Australia, there's just not the services and, you know, the postal service and all sorts of things to be able to. Yeah, it's interesting to think of the limitations. So much benefit from living in the country. Highly advocate for it. But yeah, there are definitely things that throw up curveballs and I guess impact the decisions you make around where your focus is in your printing.
Definitely. Yeah. It's like the hustle is, it's just not possible to do the hustle. You know, like, hey, I need this print job. I need it printed in a week. Can you do it in the city? Yeah, I could. Like I could drive just 15 minutes max and I would have picked up every item that I needed from my like periphery. But here, like I'm not driving 6 hours to like go pick up something, or you know, wait for the postal service for it to magically make it appear.
And the postal service in Australia is does its job, but some parts of the world, I'm sure, like I've had friends who've lived in the US where it's quite efficient, is yeah, quite slow. So even if you pay for express post, I don't know what Margaret River is like, but Albany, it's 3 to 4 days express post sometimes, and we're 5 hours away. So it's not, you know, we're not in the central Australia and not that far, but it just, sometimes you can get lucky and it can be the 2 to 3 day mark, but quite commonly it's just late.
That's wild. Yeah, yeah. Marks isn't that bad. Although, yeah, I recently had something FedExed to America and it took a month. It just sat somewhere for a month, and that was so unacceptable.
Yeah, that really slows you down. Like you have to really,
yeah,
like you said, surrender is kind of like a theme of country living as well as being an artist.
Yeah, if there's a wedding and there's a huge delay like that, it's a completely irrelevant product by the time it arrives. You know, if it's a menu for a wedding day and you've missed the wedding, it's,
and that pressure and is just not continue to try and push to engage with those services. It's just putting enormous amounts of pressure on yourself.
Yeah, it's stressful. And I've worked with like clients all over the world, had, you know, menus sent to places like Positano, Puglia, Mexico. It arrived. The one that was like the most stressful was from Perth to Mandurah, which is an hour. That was sort of at the time when I was like moving down south, and I was just like, I think I'm done. The stress is too much.
Yeah.
But it's nice, like having the shop has, you know, like been another outlet for the little press. So yeah, it was time to let it go. Definitely. I think more and more people are doing digital invites, unfortunately. Yeah. I don't know. It was just time.
So your focus now.
I love making everyday stationery. So like greeting cards and notebooks, and then just these other little things that I don't even know what category you'd put them in, but yeah, like inspiration decks and my faux tin frames.
I didn't realize that they were paper.
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I always put in the notes people's social media. So I will link the little press in. But if you're desperate to have a look, type the little press into Instagram and have a look, because I'm sure there is a post on them saved on the feed somewhere. And they will look exactly like tin.
Yeah, they would never exist if it wasn't for happy accidents in the press room. Like I was printing something, and then I found something shiny, and I was like, oh, I wonder what will happen if I print on this thing. And then it just reminded me of press tin, which reminded me of, yeah, when I was little, I had a Greek grandma, step grandma, and we would go to her house, and she just had a million photos of Jesus in little tiny golden frames. And yeah, we couldn't really understand each other from the language. So I would just sit there and just study each photo until it was done and we could go home again. Yeah, I think that's kind of sparked like this whole shrine era that I'm in at the moment. So yeah, I make cards and notebooks that hold the space for, you know, like reflection, journaling, but also like a greeting card. I don't know if you have some, but I've got greeting cards from when I was little, and like it's so special. It holds the space for those times that you actually write down how much you love somebody, or how much, you know, you're just like so grateful for something that they did, or marking a big moment in life, like a birthday or a wedding, or like a sad, like a funeral, like everything. Yeah, I love that they hold the space for that. I think it's important.
Yeah, and they become such treasures because things change, or, you know, people also die. And like I think of like some of the ones that I have from my nana, you know, that she's not here anymore, and my dad never wrote in cards very much, but I think I have one birthday card that he wrote more than just to Liana from dad. And it is, you know, like I always treasured it, but the fact that those people aren't here anymore, it's just they become such treasures. And like you said, they just encapsulate and hold an essence of people's affection and love, whatever the occasion, like you said, whether it's a celebratory one or like sympathy one. I don't think you can underestimate the value of cards. So,
and handwriting too. I would go stay with my dad some summers, and my mum would write me letters. And I could tell by her handwriting, there's a shift in the handwriting, like from the start of the letter to the middle of the letter to the end of the letter. Like the start of it's kind of like, how are you? Everything's kind of neat. And then the middle is like telling me about something more important, or something where she's in the zone of writing, like you are when you're mid-conversation. And then the end of the letter where you're kind of running out of paper and you're writing really small and you're scrunching it in. I just think like, with the handwriting, it is showing you like how they feel. I think you can sense that from someone's writing, and it shows their personality as well so much. Everyone's handwriting is so different. It's a beautiful fingerprint. And so many people say in the shop, oh, you know, like, could you print something for me because I have terrible handwriting? I'm like, I've given this whole like rant about how important handwriting is. It's a piece of your soul. Like, yeah, it's beautiful.
That makes me really sad as well. People coming into your shop saying sad things.
Oh, they get like a rant. Don't worry, they walk out like, woof, shouldn't have said handwriting in front of that lady.
Yeah. But you're right, that it is an imprint from the uniqueness of each of us. Handwriting is so special. I think it's so lovely that you create housing for it, you know, like you create the houses that the handwriting lives in.
That inspires me.
I'm so enjoying hearing about everything, but we are sort of winding up, I guess, with our
time. A couple of questions I do like to finish up with, just I get fascinated by people's answers and it's sort of a nice way to create consistency. So Emily, I'd love to hear if you have any like barriers to your creativity or your art making and any tips for people to overcome them. A lot of listeners are navigating and battling, I guess, the things that they make art making or engaging with creativity difficult. So I think it's lovely to hear from creatives if you experience one in particular, or if you have any advice for people that are looking to be more creatively connected.
I definitely acknowledge that a lot of people feel like that because I've seen it so much in the shop as well, but over the years. And then I go on one of my rants again where I'm like, everyone is creative. You just have to keep making things. You have to just keep trying different processes until you find the thing that sparks you. And it might not be something obvious like painting, or I don't know, it could be anything. Like, there's so many different things to do. How do you know if you haven't tried them all? And I think just dropping the idea that it's going to be perfect, just do it for the enjoyment. Yeah, I think, yeah, I've been really lucky that I don't have a barrier to my creativity. So, you know, maybe like time frames or procrastination or things like that, but creativity is my friend. It's always been there.
I think for you, I can hear, like, I just hear so strongly throughout the whole interview how much your practice gives you and how passionate you are, and like you said, how much spark is there. So I wonder if it's like, if we find something that sparks so much in us that it often overrides a lot of the barriers, like they're not, that kind of breaks them down, I guess. Like you said, we're all human. We all have those days where we're a bit like lazy or a bit like, you know, spend too much time on our phone or whatever it is. But I think if the joy and the passion is so large that it probably breaks a lot of them down for you because it magnetizes you.
Like you said before, it ebbs and flows though. You know, sometimes I might not feel creative. Sometimes I do feel creative. It's definitely been seasons where I've been prolifically creative and huge shifts in my work have occurred in this small time. And then there's been like times where I've just coasted for years and felt like nothing's new. And then...
Is that hard to keep going? Like when you're in those seasons where you're like, oh, when you're kind of coasting?
For me, that was the period when I was doing wedding invitations. Although, you know, there would always be these little, like there would be jobs that push the boundary and there would be little incremental shifts. But I guess with that coasting, there's also, there's something nice about it too, in that you're in your groove, you're making the thing that you make. And for me, you know, you're being rewarded by clients coming to you and giving those works to you. It might be different if I wasn't being paid for the work, but I think there's an enjoyment in the trains just rolling or on a flat ground. And it's, as long as it's giving you back something, then it's a nice place to be. And you know, that somewhere along the road, you're either going to break down or it's going to be a hill or you're going to be forced to change. So I think it's a nice thing to enjoy that season. For me, when I did the open studios last year, I kind of came to a huge uphill where I was like, shit, do I have anything to say? Anything new to say? Like what is this new body of work going to be? And that was like pretty terrifying because I had been coasting for a few years, I guess. And I hadn't made art specifically just for art's sake in a few years. So, yeah, I think that was challenging.
Yeah, tipped you into it, that, yeah, that discomfort that makes us, yeah, assess where we're at and what we can do and what we have to say. And
yeah, there's always so much you can do, though, with any art. My partner, Rob, teaches guitar. Like, it's just infinite. You can go on forever. You can never, there's always something to learn, which is really cool.
Yeah.
With letterpress, I could challenge myself by doing like a 10 color letterpress print. If I really got bored, I could do that.
Save that for if that day ever comes where you're like, no, I need to challenge myself. Let's pull out the 10, the 10 color challenge.
Yeah, definitely. I think I did a 3 color or a 4 color for the last exhibition, which was clearly me going, okay, well, I'll pull out the multiple color letterpress card as a challenge, which was nice.
Yeah. Okay, I've got 2 more questions and then I'm going to let you get on with your evening. Favorite creative memory?
Yeah, when I saw that question, I was like trying to think of a few, and then I thought whatever one else pops into my head at the time, I'll tell you. So it's the one, a favorite creative memory is when I was really little I must have been like 10 or 8. And I think someone had given me some drawing pencils. And I was just like, Mom, I'm going to go draw a picture somewhere. We'll be back later. As you do back in the 80s, or this is the 90s. And you just leave the house for hours at a time. You don't tell your parents where you're going or what you're doing. And they can't contact you. So I just set off with my pad and my pencils. And I went up to this beautiful view. And I just drew the scene. And actually, so not many people know this about me, but I grew up in Greece.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I knew that you had an affinity with Europe, but I didn't realize you'd grown up in Greece.
Yeah. I think the question in your notes about like that you could see the inspiration of typography, symbolism and pattern, that was really interesting to me because I think a lot of that does stem from my childhood in that there's this common language outside of talking and writing in that there's the body language that we have and symbols that we use and they're common across the whole world. I think it's really beautiful. And then patterns also share that as well. So when I was in India, you'd see patterns. And then in Greece and Mexico or South America and folk art in the UK, like there's all these common threads. It's like a universal language. And I mean, I stare at the patterns for hours and I see, and I go, oh, I think that's the yin yang symbol that's across all these different cultures. And yeah, it's just beautiful. Like there's this thread. Because I was little, so my mum did a Shirley Valentine where she left the UK and fell in love with a Greek boat driver specifically. But she did it before Shirley Valentine came out. And so, yeah, I was about like 1 year old. And then we left Greece when I came to year 8 in high school. So it was a pretty big chunk of childhood. And it was really beautiful because my stepdad being, or ex-stepdad being a boat driver, we were always quite close to the water for his work. And yeah, my mum and him would like take tourists on boats, like boat trips around the island. And mum would hand paint these signs, boat trip, on these wooden boards, which I just loved, like the typography. And being in Greece, the letter forms there in the language are really beautiful. And even if I was too young to understand what they were, that you just, you know, your eye just follows them. They're just beautiful letter forms. But yeah, then I was old enough to understand the language and read them. But yeah, it was really cool. And it definitely made a big impact on me and my love of using symbols and finding a way to communicate that speaks to that on that soul level that bypasses all the other language barriers or, you know, all the other physical barriers we put on ourselves in society that separate us. There's that common thread, which is really beautiful.
Mm.
And that's what I love, like tapping into with my work.
I guess actively being a creator of another form of connection and communication. Yeah, that's so so interesting, as I knew that you liked traveling. Now I think of you as this treasure hunter, but for patterns and like, that all the places that you've been able to immerse in that seeking of that thread and see it interwoven in all of these different places. That's really, really cool. I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it. I think I would love to read a book or, you know, someone that's literally gone and taken the photos of the different like styles of folk art and put them together. And it's just, yeah, it just fascinates me. I'm sure that book's out there.
Yeah, because it's like that duality of, I think, I mean, you know, like you're saying with Rob and his music and that there's so many different combinations of art making that you can just go endlessly. And so there's this strong current of difference all the time. Like I always say to people, like you will never create something, even if you're actively attempting to copy someone, it will never be exactly the same because it's done by a different hand. But then at the same time as like there's this infinite amount of differences possible, there's also this commonality because it's human expression. And that there's an essence in a lot of expression that we identify with, and there's similarities, and that the fact that there can be like those similarities on completely different geographical locations is just, yeah, really mind blowing and yeah, really, really fascinating. It would be really interesting to compare side by side to have like a visual.
And Greece geographically is in between China and Europe. Greece is in the middle. So they're seeing all these different cultures pass through and their interpretation of it is different. Yeah. like it's all shaped by their surroundings. Like everyone, it's almost like everyone's saying the same thing, but in their own style, which is, you know, based off where they are geographically, the limitations that they're working with their tools. And that's why I love embroidery, because that's a real like necessity across so many like older cultures, is that you need clothes to be warm. And like textiles and tapestries really fascinate me too, and the meanings that are woven into them. I would love to read a book on that too.
Yeah, there's so much history there and so much symbolism and storytelling that happens visually.
Yeah, so it's kind of a huge tangent to the question.
That's okay. It's an enjoyable one. I embrace enjoyable tangents. Our last question is, do you have a creative wish or dream at the moment?
The only one that comes to mind is a huge one, and it's, I think wishes and dreams is a beautiful way to say it, because I think daydreaming is just such an important part of the process. And so I currently daydream about my future family and just having a creative life, like teaching them a creative life, and hopefully raising children that don't feel limited with their creativity and just know that they can do anything creative that they can put their mind to, because there's no right or wrong, and that's the best thing about it. There's never a wrong answer. Yeah, and just, I mean, my childhood was really creative, not really because I was surrounded by artists or makers or anything. My mom always says I could never draw a stick figure, but I think she taught us creativity in the way that she lived and traveled.
And she was also hand painting the signs for the boat tours, let's not forget.
Yes, exactly. An underpaid sign writer. They were really, it was really good typography. So yeah, I think there's that. That's my daydream.
That's a wonderful dream.
Having a musical band, and we've got so many instruments in the house. Our children are going to be forced to play music in the family band. And I already have some large sketchbooks, you know, prepped for my future children that will make really great scrapbooks. So yeah, it's inevitable.
Oh, lovely. Well, I hope that you are blessed with a beautiful tribe.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for today's interview.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. Yeah. And thanks to everyone who's listening. I hope it was somewhat inspiring to hear my rambles.
Absolutely.
And lectures on how important handwriting is and paper.
Yes. If anyone takes anything away from today's podcast, it is like, buy things on paper, create things on paper, enjoy things on paper. Thank you so much for listening to Art Muse Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, then please like, share, or follow on whichever listening app you use. If you want to keep up to date on social media, the best place to find us is on Instagram at artmuse_podcast.